You're listening to The World Cafe. I'm Talia Schlanger. Okay, have a listen to this. Maybelline, why can't you be true? Oh, Maybelline, why can't you be true? You done started doing the things you used to do. That is 1955's Maybelline, the first hit for Chuck Berry, who died in March of this year at the age of 90. Now, most of us know Chuck Berry as a pioneer, if not the pioneer, who would go on to define rock and roll. But my guest today knew him as Dad. Charles Berry Jr. is here to share memories of growing up and watching his father on TV, joining him on tour in his later years, and contributing to what would be his final record, an album called Chuck, that came out in June. Chuck was decades in the making. It's Berry's first collection of almost entirely new songs since 1979's Rocket. Chuck features this song, which might sound familiar, but pay close attention. She wondered if he's ever coming back someday. The brighter lights and glory make us keep him away. But then he wrote and told her, do not be dismayed. The love you have for me will never be betrayed. They want me to do a movie about my livelihood. And I want you to play the part of Lady Be Good. That's Lady Be Good, Chuck Berry's response to Johnny Be Good. Johnny was one of his classic hits and the first song his son Charles Berry Jr. ever played with him on stage. So you didn't start out playing with your dad or maybe even start out wanting to be in his band. I read that you played on stage with him for the very first time in 1979.
Yeah, it was 79, 80. There's an amusement park here in St. Louis. They're changed, so I guess I shouldn't mention them on the radio and give them a free plug. But my dad, he played at that amusement park in their amphitheater several times, and I'm just standing out in the crowd, you know. The guys recognized me, so they let me get down to the press area. Dad's, you know, he's playing. We make eye contact, finally, and he motions for me to get up on stage. So I'm like, oh, okay, so he's just going to let me get up on stage, walk backstage. No. Before I know it, I have his 355 on my back, and he says, okay, take us out. And I was like, what does that mean? You know, I had no clue. And take out the last of Johnny Be Good. Now, Talia, I guess, you know, I wasn't a guitarist, but at least I, you know, goofed around enough to manage to figure out what key was in and just did a quick tag and took the rest of the song out. That was my first experience.
Oh, okay, wait. How old are you at this point?
17, 18.
You're not a professional musician.
No.
Your dad is one of the most respected, greatest musicians in the world at that time. And like, how much pressure is that to just get up on stage and try and rip with the guys with the guys who are doing what they're doing? Like,
yeah, there was some pressure involved, but you know, everybody on stage I knew well. That was before the advent of YouTube and cell phones, so I'll never know if I did a good job or not. But it was fun. It was fun because I was hanging out with my dad.
Well, yeah, had he taught you how to play guitar before? Or had you jammed with him around the house when you were a kid?
Well, not really. No, he would sit down when he was doing, you know, when he was like have a creative spurt. He'd say, "Come here, man, let me show you." So he would show me that kind of stuff. So, you know, the little bits and pieces he showed me over the years, they actually lended themselves well to when I actually joined the band and still didn't know what I was doing, but oh well. It was the coolest take your kid to work experience I think anyone could ever have.
No kidding. And that was 2000 or 2001?
2001, after the death of my sister Ingrid's husband, who was the guitarist, and he also was second guitarist, and he also played drums. My dad asked me after one of the shows, I did crowd interference and security for him at that point. And Talia, yeah, now then I was really freaked out because I've gone from, was it 1979, 1980 to playing about 15 or 20 seconds on stage to 1996 doing one show at one of the casinos out in Las Vegas and screwing up. And I was like, well, I'm sure this has sealed my face, to Dad coming and saying, no, I want you to be in the band.
Wow. I mean, I'm just thinking, like, your dad could have had any rhythm guitarist in the world be happy to join his band. I mean, he's Chuck Berry, but he's putting in the time and the effort and using the patience that it requires, I guess, to make sure that you get to do it with him. Do you know why it was that he needed you to be up on stage with him playing those shows?
I guess because he loved me. I mean, he was my dad and I was his son. We loved each other very much. And so, you know, he had his son-in-law, who he loved like another son, pass away. And Talia, I don't know if he's like, okay, here's my son. I have a, you know, because I was an IT guy. He, you know, I could do any, he thought I could do anything regarding a computer, any of that stuff. He knew I knew how to do that. He says, well, if you can work on these computers and certainly can sit up here and play guitar. It's like, dude, it's not as easy. No. It is a whole different realm. But I guess it was just that, you know, he knew, he was confident in my ability to learn. And he just enjoyed having his kids up on stage with him. No question about that. I mean, my dad was happiest when he was around us, and my mom. So,
you're listening to The World Cafe. I'm Talia Schlanger. My guest is Charles Berry Jr., whose father is Chuck Berry. We're sort of reminiscing about the time that you spent with him on tour and on stage. I read one anecdote that after a show at Blueberry Hill when he was 88, he came off stage and said, "Oh man, I could have done a little better." And that to me sort of speaks to how much he wanted to entertain people and entertain his fans every time he stepped out on stage. And I'm wondering for you, like as a son, there's like sort of the joy of watching your dad do what he's meant to do. But then was there also a sort of protective side that you felt like, you know, seeing him not duck walk in the same way or thinking about that hip as he's going for the splits? Like, was there a protective side of you as a son on stage thinking like, oh, you know, my dad, you know, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, as long as I didn't see him in any kind of physical pain, I'm like, dad, rip, go for it. You know, yes, I saw my dad in his, what turned out to be his twilight of his career and his life for that matter. But as long as I saw that my dad was happy, that was what was important to me. He would come off stage and he'd say, "Woo, that hip is tearing me up." I was like, "Man, well, you know, what do you want to do? You want an ice pack or something?" No, I'll be all right. I just need some sit down, get some orange juice and some buffalo wings, and I'll be all right. I was like, "Okay, I don't know what kind of medicine that is, but all right, I'll go with that. Bet, fine."
That's the secret. That's the secret. You've just revealed the Chuck Berry secret to not aging it. Orange juice and buffalo wings. I love it.
Well, Talia, in all actuality, my dad was a very, very hard worker. You know, he gave his all on stage, but the man was just, he was just a machine. You know, he was born in 1926. So he, by the time he's, 4 or 5 years old, the Depression is, you know, in full tilt. And it was a matter of survival for him him and his brothers and sisters, for that matter, at a very young age to work. If you didn't work, you were not going to live. My dad pushed a vegetable cart with his father. His father was also a carpenter. So not only did he play a lot of music, but he also built an incredible amount of things around St. Louis. They knew how to do it all. That's what kept my father alive, is his work ethic. Just get up and, "Well, I'll go cut the grass today. Dad, it's 70 acres. So what? I'll just get on the tractor, cut the grass, and, you know, just do something." He had to stay busy. That's what kept him youthful and full of life.
Wow. What's one song that was on the set list every night, no matter what?
Johnny Be Good. That was my dad's. I know that was his favorite song. He was going to either do his famous scoop or he was going to do a duck walk. He was going to do something. We were going to be playing that song.
Perfect. All right, let's listen to it right now. This is Chuck Berry, right. Johnny Be Good.
Deep down in Louisiana, close to New Orleans, way back up in the woods among the evergreens, there stood a log cabin made of earth and wood, where lived a country boy named Johnny Be Good, who never ever learned to read or write so well, but he could play a guitar just like a ring in a bell. Go, go!
That's Johnny B. Good, Chuck Berry. His final album, released just shortly after he died, is called Chuck, and I'm speaking to his son, Charles Berry Jr. So, Charles, You knew what your dad did for a living when you were growing up, I assume. But I'm wondering, like, when did you become aware that what he did was different than what other kids' parents were doing?
Tali, when I saw him on television, that's when I really realized that there was something different about my father. So, you know, 4, 5, 6-year-old kid whose mother yells, "He's on," and starting to understand, okay, what she's saying is your dad's about to come on television again. How is it that he's on television? You know, Walter Cronkite's on TV. I know he has to be a big shot. He comes on every day. The president, you know, President Johnson's on television. I see Martin Luther King on TV. I saw the Queen of England on television. And now Dad is on. So he must be a kind of a big wheel or something. You know, so I started to understand. It's like, no, he's just not, you know, just the well, he was a regular dad to us, but he, you know, but it's like he's not just like the rest of the kids' dads on the street. He must be kind of a big shot.
Yeah, I mean, it must have been so strange and so exciting. And then I'm thinking about, like, when the first time that you would see your dad on TV like that, and then he would come home. Like, how do you understand that or wrap your head around that as a kid? Like, whoa, I just saw this person who loves me and tucks me in at night, like, on the television, but now he's back here. I mean,
well, you know, after I guess that first time seeing on television, and then he comes home, you know, just the door opens and there he is. You are on television, yeah. But you know, it immediately just settled into a normalcy, Talia, because you know when my dad came home. The door opened. That was Dad that walked in the door. It wasn't this celebrity that I saw on television.
Yeah. So I guess we out here know Chuck Berry. But tell me what's different, or tell me. I mean, who that person was that was Dad when he was at home? What was he like?
He was a fun loving father. You know, always wanting to teach us, show us. Didn't take any foolishness off of us, you know, because I was like all little kids, we got into trouble and we did things the children did. So, you know, he would step in on that as well. But he was a great father.
You're listening to The World Cafe. I'm Talia Schlanger. My guest is Charles Berry Jr., son of Chuck Berry, whose latest album and last album is called Chuck. So your dad had to have spent a lot of time on the road when you were a kid. Did you like, I'm sure you missed him when he was gone. Did you feel like he was there as much as you wanted? Did you miss him when he was away?
No, well, yeah, of course we wanted him there more, but, and I missed him tremendously when he was away. 'Cause yeah, he did tour extensively when I was a little boy, a lot. He mm-hmm. was gone a heck of a lot, but I just understood. And it took a while. Took a long time because, you know, I'd see all the other kids, mothers and fathers on our street that we lived on. You know, you see the dads go off and to work in the morning and come back. Well, my dad would leave and then be gone for weeks on end and then come back. But he compensated for those times that he was gone. I mean, just by the sheer fact that he was there and we knew that he loved us a great deal, spent as much time as he possibly could with us. So, yeah, it was difficult, you know, until I really understood, okay, this is what this guy does. It's a totally unique to anybody else in the neighborhood, and that's just his job.
Yeah. I'm wondering if you would ever go to one of your friends' houses and their parents would be, like, playing a record by your dad.
Yeah. Yes, Talia, I did. That happened.
And I'm wondering, like, when I think about a song like Sweet Little 16, mm-hmm. sort of like about teenage rebellion and mm-hmm. and with a like a comedy, you know, a comedic sort of wink and a nod, what it is to be a young person. Were you ever like embarrassed, like, oh, man, I'm a teenager. This is talking about my, you know, what it's like to be a teenager. Did you ever have those feelings?
Oh, no, never. No. Never. Because my dad had the ability to tell stories very, very well. From life experiences and things he observed. So Sweet Little 16 is, you know, it's like I said, teenage rebellion, the whole shooting match is contained in that particular song. No, never embarrassed. Never, never, not once. Ding-a-ling was kind of a, you know, a teeterer because it was so silly. Yeah, I said it's silly. It was a silly song. It was one that my dad would play as a joke during his shows. And, you know, on the London Chuck Berry sessions, that song is a live number. I don't know if he ever planned on doing a studio version of it, but it turned out to be a number one song. It's like, really, this one? But, oh, well, as my dad said, he didn't write any dirty music. It may have a little dust on it, but it was never dirty.
I love it. Let's listen to that song right now. I think it's right about time. This is Chuck Berry and My Ding-a-Ling.
We got to do our alma mater. We must do our alma mater. When I was a little bitty boy, my grandmother bought me a cute little toy. Silver bells hanging on a string. She told me it was my ding-a-ling-a-ling. Oh,
ding-a-ling.
That is My Ding-a-Ling. Chuck Berry, my guest, is his son, Charles Berry Jr. You're listening to The World Cafe. I'm Talia Schlanger. So I'm wondering, you know, teenage years, teenage rebellion, cars were also a really big deal to your father. And he had, you know, great music about cars. Did he teach you how to drive?
That's a first. I haven't been asked that one before. Okay. Yeah, my dad really, really, really enjoyed the entire experience of cars and driving them, owning them, working on the whole thing. Not so much working on it because, you know, by the time I came around, he was like, oh, no, we'll just take it to Lindbergh Cadillac and have it fixed. But when I was a very little boy, my dad was either coming home or he was leaving. And I think I was crying because, you know, he was leaving. So he sat me in his lap in the driver's seat. And he let me, well, what I thought was drive the car down the street. Now, of course, he had his knee or, his, you know, his leg on the lower part of the steering wheel, and my feet couldn't reach the brakes. But you talk about a little kid just beaming, absolutely beaming. I'm driving the car with my dad. You know, that was one of the proudest moments of my life as a little kid. No, so he didn't really have to show me how to drive. But he gave me some pointers. Now, Tali, I'm gonna have to be honest with you. My dad was probably one of the worst drivers on this planet. But so I learned pretty early on after, you know, those great experiences of him let me, you know, sit in his lap and drive down the street. Once I had the ability, oh no, Dad, I'll drive myself, man. I'll meet you there. Yeah, his driving skills were the equivalent of riding a roller coaster without a seatbelt on. It was always a thrill.
But he drove everywhere. Like, I've read that he wouldn't take a tour bus sometimes and that he would insist on, like, driving to gigs and putting the gear in the back of the car and driving. And you're telling me that this was all, like, riding a roller coaster with no seatbelt on?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was horrible. It was horrifying. It was horrifying. But, I mean, see, now, but there's a reason for him wanting to drive himself. Way back when, early in his career, you know, he got burned, just like all the rest of them got burned, whether it be a contract or, you know, recording contract, that type of thing where people are added, or get to a show and the terms of the contract aren't fulfilled like they were supposed to. So he learned well. He, after maybe one or two shows, there was supposed to be a car for him with a driver. Well, after the show, car and driver are long gone. He's like, okay, so how am I supposed to get back to, you know, I can't remember where he told me the first experience this happened. But the car was gone. The driver was gone. And he's basically left in the lurch. How am I supposed to get back to the airport, you know, to get back to where I'm supposed to be? So he's like, okay, I got a fix for that. He put in his rider. That he specified the type of car he wanted. He also specified that he would be in possession of the vehicle for the entire duration from the time he gets from the airport to his hotel, to whatever the venue was, back to his hotel, and then the airport. And he also specified that he would be in possession of the keys to the vehicle for the entire duration of his encounter with, wherever he was playing. So it was one, the love that he did love to drive. But then also, I mean, my dad was a pretty good businessman. So he's like, you know what? I bet you cannot get me left on the curb or at the back of this concert venue if I have the keys, if I park the car, if I lock the doors. It was a pragmatic approach to solving a business problem.
I think we should listen to a driving song now, huh?
Oh yeah.
Some Maybelline, maybe.
Sure, Jaguar and the Thunderbird. There's plenty of them.
Which one should we listen to? Which one you pick?
Jaguar and the Thunderbird.
Great, perfect.
Slow down, Jaguar. Keep cool, Thunderbird fool. 10 mile stretch on an Indiana road when a sky blue Jaguar and a Thunderbird fool. Jaguar sitting on 99, trying to beat the bird to the county line. Just a half a mile from Newtonville, had a speed sign sitting at the top of the hill. Said 35 miles and stay in line, but the Jaguar and Thunderbird never made the sign. Slow down.
That's Chuck Berry, Jaguar and the Thunderbird. I'm speaking to his son, Charles Berry Jr. The last album that Chuck Berry released is called Chuck. You're listening to The World Cafe. So I want to talk a little bit about your mom, Toddy, who was married to your dad for 68 years, who he dedicated this record to, and he wrote, "My darling, I'm growing old. I've worked on this record for a long time. Now I can hang up my shoes." What was your mom's role in your dad's career?
Well, early on, you know, she pushed him. When they were first married in 1948, what was it, October 29th? She'll get me if I give that date wrong. Yeah, I believe it was October 29th of 1948. You know, my dad was a strapping young man, and he worked for a time as a janitor at one of the automotive plants here in St. Louis, but he also played his guitar. His friend taught him how to play, you know, showed him little bits and pieces, but he really loved playing the guitar. And much to the displeasure of his mother and father, who, you know, both growing up or being active in the Baptist church, you know, my dad's playing blues music. He's playing country and western music, all on guitar, and it's like, that's that devil music. You shouldn't be playing that stuff. So, you know, they weren't really encouraging him to play that. You know, if anything, it would be church oriented. Well, you know, he didn't really want to play that. But my mom, she grew up on the blues. You know, my mother's from Mississippi, so she saw that talent, and she started pushing him towards, you know, You're good at this. You should give it a shot. You know, why don't you just try and do a little playing here and there? So that's what he did. And so you can credit Chuck Berry's career directly to Thametta Berry. You know, she pushed him in the direction to get out and start playing. And when Maybelline hit, it was pretty much a meteoric rise in popularity for my father. So they immediately started touring. She got to see all of it very early on, and she did quite a few of the tours. I guess she made it through maybe 3-4 years of them just being on the road. Like, okay, that's enough. I've got two daughters. I'm going home. I'll see you on television, or just tell me what's going on. So she had a big part in the early part of his career, and you know, when he would write songs, mom would be kind of the clearinghouse. Many cases when he could get them. He bring home acetate so she could listen to him, and she would, you know, she would give a thumbs up, a thumbs down. Now the thumbs ups far outweighed the thumbs down, but he did listen to my mom's creative criticisms on his music, and a lot of that music is I can attribute to her having a say in it.
Wow, can you remember? Is there like a song in particular that you remember an experience of her giving the thumbs up or the thumbs down to in progress?
No. The stuff off the new album. I can remember very, very early versions of Big Boys and Wonderful Woman because my dad had his recording studio for a time in their house. down in the basement. That's a perfect example. Those two, which, and I'm, now, Tali, I'm talking, this is probably 91 is when the studio was rebuilt. Yeah, so 25, 26 years ago, where she's saying, keep going. This sounds great.
Did he write the song Wonderful Woman about her? Is that about your mom?
You know, I don't know.
Okay.
I mean, it's a really good song, and it sounds like something that he would write about someone that he loves. So that's a great possibility.
Okay. Well, I want to play that one now off the new album. This is Chuck Berry with Wonderful Woman.
Oh, well, look here now. This just makes my day. There's a wonderful woman. She just walked by my way. Well, I was standing there trembling like a leaf on a willow tree. Hoping the great, big, beautiful eyes would fall on me. I just wishful thinking, but I hope that it still might be.
That's Wonderful Woman, Chuck Berry. His latest and final album called Chuck, released just a couple months before he passed away, and I'm speaking with his son, Charles Berry Jr. We talked a bit about sort of your awareness that your dad was special and different from other dads because you saw him on TV and you were with your mom while she was holding the fort. And I'm wondering, I mean, there were struggles and there were difficult times, too, for your dad and his career in the public eye. And I'm wondering if you had any awareness of that when you were growing up, or if there was anything sort of that your mom told you about what it was like.
Well, the stuff prior to me being born, I just, you know, they didn't really discuss it because there wasn't really much to really say. As I got older and, you know, he had some issues with some taxes and that type of thing, he readily admitted, well, hey, yeah, I goofed up. So, hey, I'm... My dad admitted to his mistakes, and as he always said, I'm not going to let the same dog bite me twice. So, you know, from that point forward, he had even better tax accountants to make sure. It's like, hey, here's every receipt that I've got. You guys go figure this out, and we'll move forward. Other issues that came up as I was, you know, growing older, it's like, well, you know, at this point, my dad is a very famous person, and it just goes with the territory that people are going to try and, oh, I can get a check. I can say anything I want and, you know, let's see what sticks. And the stuff didn't stick, but, you know, the stigma is still behind it. Well, you've been accused of this, and then there's the whole court of public opinion. So, you know, you can't control what somebody thinks, but from a legal standpoint, okay, well, this is the finding of the court. See ya.
This is the World Cafe. I'm Talia Schlanger, and I'm speaking with Charles Berry Jr., son of Chuck Berry. Your dad's music had this amazing ability to cut through segregation, and he really changed the culture, I think, around race, bringing white kids and black kids together. At the end of the 50s, he opened a racially integrated St. Louis nightclub called Berry's Club Bandstand. What did he tell you about some of the obstacles that he might have faced as a black man doing what he was doing when he was doing it?
Well, he always took that kind of stuff as a challenge. I think that was one of the reasons why Club Bandstand was open. For a simple fact, oh, you can't do that? I can't? Okay, well, watch. Watch me. You know, Talia, when my dad started off, well, his whole life prior to that, he was confronted with barriers and limitations, artificial limitations. That he took as a challenge. He's like, you know what? Okay, I just performed in venue XYZ. They didn't let me walk through the front door. I couldn't eat at the same commissary as the rest of the people, concession stand that's out front. All right, okay, that's no problem. But the people came. This was a sellout show, as they all were prior, and hopefully the ones in the future will be. And my music is going to tell the story. You know, you asked about Sweet Little 16. It was the perfect mix of fun. It's just absolute fun, and it was something that was just irresistible in regards to somebody wanting to start tapping their foot or starting to dance or, you know, just have a good time. Well, did it matter who you were having a good time with? Well, the powers that be said yes. But the fans said no. They don't care who's in the room with them. They don't care who they're dancing with. And that was my dad's challenge to himself. It's like, I'm going to write music. I'm going to do things that challenge what's in front of me. I can make music that, unless you are in a coma, your foot's going to be tapping to. That if you're, you know, you're in a show where I am, it's going to make you jump up. And it's not going to matter who's standing next to you. If everybody else is dancing and somebody else is not dancing, you don't care who that is, you're going to start dancing. And I think it worked.
I want to thank you, Charles, so much for speaking to me today about your dad, Chuck Berry. Thank you.
Oh, no, Tali, the pleasure is all mine, and thank you.
Charles Berry Jr. is the son of Chuck Berry. Chuck Berry died in March. His final album came out posthumously in June. It's called Chuck. I'm Talia Schlanger, back in a moment on The World Cafe.